My name is Andrew Miner. I've been on the Pivot team for a little over a year now. Most been working on both building collections themselves when we were actually building the first version and trying to figure out how do we best present this thing, what kinds of things can you do with it, how do you actually go about building content. You know, there's an awful lot of data that goes into any one of these collections. So how do you wrangle that all together and make the right file formats and get the whole thing to work well in Pivot? And then since then, I've been working a lot on how do we get tools out to different customers so that they themselves can build content on their own. The tools that we used when we were building our first collections were pretty rough. They broke a lot. They required a lot of handholding, and you kind of had to be a dev to use them. So we've been spending a lot of time lately trying to build up a set of tools that other folks can use, whether you're a developer and you're happy to dig in with the C# and write your own XML, or whether you're more comfortable in Excel and you'd rather just put your data together there, push a button, and have it come up in Pivot. So first I wanted to kind of walk through some of the features in the Pivot viewer and get you familiar with some of the terminology that we're going to use as we dig into some of the file formats and whatnot. So looking over on the left-hand side, we've got what we call the filter pane or facet pane. And that contains a bunch of different facet categories. So group, size, popularity, temperament. And these are all attributes of the individual items in your collections. Generally, items will have one or more values for each facet category, or maybe no values at all. That's perfectly fine, too. Looking across the screen, going towards left, we're looking at the field of all the items. So each of these items has its own entry in the different file formats that we're talking about, which defines not only the imagery that's going to be used for that item, but also all the data that we're seeing over in the facet pane. And of course, this is where the secret sauce of Pivot comes from, is how do you select the individual items that you're interested in? Well, by picking and choosing among all these different values that are associated with each item. Looking along the top here, we've got the title, our ability to sort by different facets. Now, these are all the same facet categories that you're seeing over in the filter pane, or the facet pane. So they show up in both places. Then we've got our different views selectors, and then we've got our zoom selector. If you pick a certain item, zoom in on just that one item, you're now also seeing this data pane, or info pane, as we call it, which is going to show you the item's title in big text at the top, the description just underneath that, and then a listing of a lot of different facet categories. And what you'll notice is that the facet categories in the filter pane are not the same as the facet categories over in the info pane. You have the ability to control where these different things show up. So one of the things we've found is sometimes you've got some data that you want to show in a numeric way, maybe it's the year that something happened over on one side, and you want to show it in a textual way over on the other side. So you might have two different facet categories that represent the same underlying data, just in slightly different ways. One of them shows up in the facet pane, one shows up in the info pane. Clicking on any of these links will bring you to the subset that shares that characteristic. So if I were to click on toy under group, I'd see all the toy dogs. Or if I were to click on moderate for grooming, I'd see all the dogs that require moderate grooming. So how do you make one of these things? What are the actual files involved? How do you go about creating all those files? So here's the basic structure. You start off with a CXML file, or collection XML file, and that contains all the item data. This describes the title of your collection, any branding that you have, search terms that you're going to add. It defines all the facet categories, exactly what their titles are, their types, all the information about those individually, and then it's got a list of all the items, telling you which image should be associated with this item and defining all the data that belongs to each one. The CXML refers to a DZC, or deep zoom collection file. The DZC is what's related to the deep zoom technology, and it tells that technology, here's the whole set of everything that you're going to look at. Here's all the images that you want to see. This file doesn't have anything about the data, just about the images and where they all live. Each DZC has a collection pyramid associated with it. Now, a collection pyramid, if you think about looking at, say, Bing Maps, and you're zoomed all the way out so you can see the whole country, you don't see all the little individual roads. You don't even really see the highways. You might see the boundaries of states. You're zoomed so far out. But you can cover a lot of ground. You see the whole country. As you zoom in closer, you're getting more data. The image is getting bigger. You can't fit it on your whole screen anymore, so maybe you can just see the state of Washington. But you're seeing a lot more detail. You're seeing more resolution. You're seeing the roads, you're seeing the highways, you're seeing some lakes and pictures and, you know, stuff going on. As you keep zooming deeper and deeper down, you eventually see Building 37 on the Microsoft campus, but very little else. You can't see Spokane. That's too far off the screen. So in order to represent something that has that resolution at the deepest part, but that breadth at the highest part, we build a pyramid of images where you might have one little image at the very, very top, and then the same image at greater resolution at the next level down, but broken up into tiles, so you only download those tiles that you're actually looking at. By the time you've gotten down all the way to the bottom, you've got a tremendous number of tiles covering a huge amount of detail, but you're still only downloading the couple that you're looking at. So that's the core of how the deep zoom technology works. And that's why you can go in and out so quickly and so fluidly, because you're never downloading any more pixels than you're actually putting on the screen. So for a deep zoom collection, what you're looking at is in each tile has all of the images in the whole collection in that composite image. And the tile is breaking down teeny little thumbnails at first, and then bigger and bigger thumbnails as you keep getting deeper. And then finally, maybe 256 by 256 representations of each image on a single tile by itself. So that's as deep as the collection level goes. Now, if you've got bigger images than 256 by 256, you're going to start using DZIs, or deep zoom images. So a deep zoom image is another XML file format that describes one image, just one. And it also has a pyramid, which serves the same purpose. So on the topmost tile, you've got a 1 pixel by 1 pixel representation of your image. On level one, it's 2 by 2, 4 by 4, 8 by 8, and so on as you keep getting down. And you go as far down as you have to go. I was talking with somebody earlier today who was building a terapixel image of the sky. That's a lot of tiles. But you're only ever going to have to download the ones you're actually looking at. And that will go very, very deep into the pyramid. So when Pivot is showing you a collection, it's going to start by reading the CXML, pull out the facet data, pull out the item data, look at for where that DZC is, and then start loading tiles from that DZC so that by the time everything's done loading, what you're seeing is all imagery built out of the top couple levels of that DZC file. You haven't actually loaded any individual images. And then as you start zooming in to an individual item, you're going to start pulling in DZIs, and you're going to start pulling in the tiles for those DZIs until you're looking at a single image of a single item or even zoomed way in on that single item. So here's what CXML looks like. It's XML. Everybody here familiar with XML, more or less? Let's start digging into some of the individual pieces of this. At the collection level, you got a collection tag. This is where you specify the overall attributes of the whole collection. So name, a brand image, a fav icon, stuff like that. And you can see over here a little image of, you know, this is where it shows up in the Pivot Viewer. Moving on into the facet categories, this little section, define each facet category individually. On the facet category tag, you're going to talk about the name, the type. There's 5 or so supported types. Whether or not it shows up in that filter pane over on the left-hand side, and then whether or not it shows up in various other places in the UI as well. Each facet category can also have a sort order. This is basically a custom sort order. So the example I chose here is the size. Well, by default, the size you get is sort order you get is by cardinality, how many items are in each of these categories. Well, that doesn't actually make a whole lot of sense for the size attribute of these dogs, because, well, maybe medium is the most popular size, but it kind of makes sense to start with toy and tiny and small and kind of progress your way through. Well, that doesn't work alphabetically either, which is the other default choice that the Pivot Viewer is going to give you. So here I've decided to make a custom sort order and specify that using this little chunk of XML to say, no, this is what I want people to see. This is the sort order that makes sense for this particular piece of data. course, you can skip this if any of those defaults work well for you. The isWordWheelVisible, it's a little confusing name, but basically what this means is in this left-hand corner at the very top of that filter pane, there's a little text area where people can type in search terms. So if you mark a particular facet as being word wheel visible, what that means is people are going to be able to do a free text search and identify items that have that text. Now, if you don't want people to be able to search on a particular field, you just set this to false and that won't be included. So now we're looking at is metadata visible? This is whether or not it shows up in that right-hand pane. And a lot of times, like I was saying before, you have some data that makes sense to show up just in the filter pane and doesn't make a lot of sense or isn't very interesting in the metadata pane. This is where you turn that off, in effect. This is also where you start seeing all of the data if you want to show it all there. So looking at our items tag, we're going to specify the name in here. There's a separate tag for the description. The description is a paragraph of text, freeform, whatever you want to stick in there. One thing to note is that the HTML is not rendered. This should be just plain text. And then you define your facets. So each facet should correspond to one of the facet categories that you've defined up above. So in this case, here's our facet named popularity, has a string value of uncommon, have a facet named size, string value of tiny, and so on. When we zoom in on one item, the parts of the CXML we're looking at are really defined by the image base attribute of the items tag, and that defines where the DZC lives. And then on each item, we have an image attribute, which defines which one of the items in the DZC should this image correspond to. So a lot of times in, say, a business intelligence collection or other collections, you may want to share images across multiple items, and this is actually not an uncommon case and that kind of thing. So here's how you would do that. The DZC will have just a listing of the unique images that you're using, and then in the CXML file, you'll specify which one of those you want to refer to. Now, for a lot of the collections we've already seen today, there was a one-to-one correspondence. Each item had its own image, and you just go straight down the list. But you can do it both ways. We're also looking at the href. So if you double-click on an item, or if you click on that little open box in the top right corner, then that's going to take you to wherever this points. And this is a good way to either link back to some other web page you have on your website where maybe the user can get more details or take a certain action or whatever kind of makes sense. Or you could even put in here an href to another collection. So maybe you want to build a nested series of collections where you start off at a top level that gives you some kind of roll-up, double-click on one of the items, and that drills you into a second collection which provides details about that thing. So our business intelligence example of stores before might be you start off with one store, you double-click on that, and you go to a collection of the weekly figures, you know, whatever that is for that particular store. So kind of walk through the interface. We've seen where the various bits land on the interface and how you can control what that all looks like. So how do you make one? What are the tools? How do you go about doing this? What's involved? Of course, there's a lot of different ways to do this. All of these are pretty open file formats. You know, even the deep zoom stuff is based on PNG or JPEG or some underlying image media that's broken out to tiles. DZI and DZC and CXML, they're all just normal XML file formats. So you could write your own code using C# to generate all of this completely from scratch. You don't need anything from us. Of course, that's a lot of work. There's a lot involved in all these file formats, so you probably don't want to do that. Nudging over a little bit in the effort scale, you can use the DeepZoom tools. DeepZoom has been around for a while, pretty well understood file format. They've got their own set of command line tools. It's all stuff that's readily available. So if you want to create your own CXML and just use the DeepZoom tools to create the rest of it, that's another choice. Of course, you're creating your own XML, which you know, is kind of a certain amount of work. PAuthor, jumping one, is a tool that we released a little while ago. This is a command line tool that converts between various representations of a collection. So for example, you could start off with an Excel spreadsheet, run this tool on it, and it will spit out a deep zoomed collection. Or you could have started out with a CXML file that you created that instead of referring to a deep zoom file, just refers directly to pings or directly to JPEGs. And this will take that format, do the appropriate conversions to wind up with deep zoom. Or you could go the other way around. Maybe you've already created your deep zoom collection and you want to go back. You noticed a mistake, or you want to add a facet, or you want to make some other change. You can point this tool at it and bring it back again. The library is going to release all of the code for how we do that and how that tool works. I'm actively working on that right now, so when I leave here, I'm going to go try and finish that up. There's also the Excel plugin, which we released when Pivot first became available as an application. And this is something you download, you install in Excel, and then you can spit out a Pivot collection based upon just what's right there in your Excel spreadsheet. So let's talk about this pAuthor tool a little bit more. This is the one that we're currently kind of putting most of our energies into and thinking most about. We think it meets the most needs across the most people. So as I was saying before, the basic idea here is it's a converter. It takes various formats, moves them into other formats. There's three formats that we support that just work with raw images. So you don't have to have used a deep zoom tool or created tile pyramids or anything ahead of time. And then we can also work with a CXML collection that has deep zoom images already. So this is for the return trip, essentially, if you wanted to bring something back again. So we can work with raw CXML, pointing to raw images. We can work with Excel, and we can work with CSV. And you can go back and forth between any combination of these that you have. So let's walk through what it looks like to start off with an Excel spreadsheet using raw images and convert that to a deep zoom collection at CXML. And this is the format that you'll be able to look at in the Pivot Viewer. In the Excel spreadsheet, you start off with three tabs, a collection tab, fast categories tab, and items tab. And this corresponds to kind of the different levels of detail that you have in your CXML file. So in the collection tab, you'll specify all the stuff that corresponds to what you can specify in that collection tag at the top level of your CXML. So name, icon, brand, image, etc. For facet categories, this is where you specify what are the facet categories that your collection ought to have. So you have to specify a name and type, and then all the rest of this stuff is optional, and it assumes pretty good values for you if you don't want to specify those things or you just want to leave it off. So this is where you'd specify, is it visible in the filter pane, is it visible in the metadata pane. If you want to specify sort values and have multiple ones in there, just hit Alt-Enter, and you can put in multiple values on different lines, and the tool will pick that up. For items, you can actually do some really interesting stuff here. First, we recognize a bunch of column headers out of the box, and these are the ones that correspond to the specific named properties in the CXML. So name, image, description. It'll take all of those things and just plunk them down in the right places in the CXML for you automatically. Now, if you notice the formula area, my description is not just text. This is Excel. You can do anything you want. So all of this stuff can be formulas based upon other data. So if you started off with a little bit of data you got out of a database, or you were given to you, or somebody sent you a spreadsheet, you can then transform that using all of the power of Excel into the data that you want to show in your collection. Of course, as we're moving along, href, related links, these are all standard things. And then we just start putting in our own facets. And all these names match up to the names that I've already specified in the facet categories tab. Now, what happens if I don't have all these tabs, or if they're not named the right way? Well, you can actually omit the collections and facet categories tabs altogether. If you do that, obviously it'll make default values up for all the different things, and it will look at your items tab and try and figure out, well, what facet categories did he intend to have? You know, let me look across the column headers and figure out which facet categories there ought to be. Obviously, it's a little restricted. It can't make perfect assumptions, but if somebody just mails you a spreadsheet and you just shove it through the tool, it'll take the first sheet that it can find that has data in it and just make some assumptions about what facet categories there ought to be and spit out a collection. So you can just run the tool on any spreadsheet, and you should be able to come up with something that at least gets you started. And then you can go and add these tabs later on and give them the right names and set things up if you want to get really specific about exactly what you want to see. Command line tool. You run it. it spits out some stuff. The command line arguments are pretty simple. Source, format of the source, where the source lives, target, format of the target, where the target lives. And then it runs off and does all this stuff. Tries to do things in parallel as much as it can to speed things up. Generating DZIs is inherently a very memory-intensive process. So it's going to use a lot of memory, as much as it can get a hold of on your machine. It's going to use as much CPU as it can get a hold of. It's assuming that you want to get this done as quickly as possible. And it goes reasonably fast. For a very, very large collection, like our Winter Olympians collection, it's maybe a half an hour to run through all 4,000 entries or whatever it is. For little collections like this one, where it's 50 items or so, it's practically instantaneous, you know, a couple seconds. And then you wind up with a collection again. But there's a catch. If you start off with a spreadsheet, chances are you don't have a lot of interesting images to look at. And where do you get them? Part of this tool is an HTML-based templating system where you can start off with a little scrap of HTML and CSS and specify what you want the template to look like and then put in curly brackets the names of the fields where you want them to show up. So this could be the image of the item. This could be the name. Could be one of the facet values. You can actually even specify the name of the facet value, join, and then some join text, and we'll take all of the values for that particular facet, munge them all together with the string you specified, and stick that into your template. So you can actually do quite a bit. Here's what a simple template would look like. All the stuff you're used to seeing, it's just CSS and HTML. We're doing a little bit of fancy stuff with some filtering, opacity, and you know whatnot to get it to look pretty. So whatever it is you can ordinarily do, you can do. Right down at the bottom there, you can see image source equals bracket images, and then just in a paragraph, bracket name. And then we style those things to land where we want them to land and to look the way we want them to look. Guess what? You run it through the tool again, specify HTML template, give it the name of your file, and here you are. You've now decorated your image. Of course, it's a really, really simple example. And you can do much, much more interesting and complicated things. So there's kind of a big continuum of different kinds of collections that you may want to make. There's a velocity scale. How fast does the data actually change? If you're looking at our dog breeds collection, well, how often does a new dog breed come along? Once a decade, every other decade, not so often. On the other hand, if you're looking at Kiva loans, well, these guys give out loans every hour, many times an hour. Look at Twitter, you know, many times a second. Radical differences. And these radical differences mean you may want to take different approaches in how you actually go about generating your collections. Another important consideration is size. How big is the collection? If you look at NFL teams, there's 32. That's it. There's not going to be any more unless they open a new franchise or something. But very, very small collections. Still an interesting collection, but it's very, very small. On the other hand, look at Winter Olympians. There's, what, 500 new Winter Olympians every time they have a Games, and they've been doing this for decades. So there's somewhere in the order of 5,000 Winter Olympians. Way more than that if you count Summer Olympians, too. Big collections. Some of you guys have really big collections. Many, many, many thousands more than that. Many millions more than that. And then a final consideration is, how do you generate this? Is it something where you know ahead of time what the data looks like? US presidents, kind of know who they are. There's only so many. Doesn't change very often. On the other hand, Wikipedia, you don't know what the person wants to look at. You can't serve them up the whole Wikipedia collection. Even if the pivot viewer could display it, nobody would want to look at it. You want to start off by saying, well, here's the area that I'm interested in. Here's where I want to start. How do I start with just that subset that makes sense to look at and that users can intelligibly work with? So you want to dynamically create the collection when the user provides some data that specifies what they want. So PAuthor is pretty good for anything that's low velocity, pretty much any size, and is generated ahead of time. The areas where you wouldn't want to use this tool are when the collection moves very, very fast. So for example, this is live sales data from your sales database, or this is your Twitter feed. You know, that kind of thing, you don't want to be generating static files ahead of time and then trying to catch up all the time, regenerating. If your data moves once a day or once a week, Sure, yeah, you can run a batch job overnight. Pretty easy. But if it's moving all the time, maybe you want a different approach. Same kind of thing with generation. Obviously, if you don't know ahead of time what your customers are going to want to look at, you don't know what collection to build ahead of time. You could take the approach of building lots and lots of collections, and for some situations that might actually work. But in a lot of cases, this doesn't do it. So the speaker who's coming up next is going to talk about how do you address these areas in particular. So here we've talked about basic structure, what CXML looks like, DZCs, DZIs, image pyramids, how they all fit together and find each other, how you wind up looking at a collection when you're done with all that. Talked about the pauthor tool that is released, available on the website now. Lets you convert between a variety of different file formats with or without Deep Zoom, and allows you to create images for your collection if you didn't have them already, just starting with an HTML, JavaScript, CSS template. And we also talked about some different types of collections and when this particular tool will be appropriate and when you'd want to find a different tool or a dynamic kind of environment. So how fast does your collection move? How big is your collection? And then when can you actually generate? When do you have enough data to know what it is you're supposed to make? So any questions? Yes, sir? So can you update a collection incrementally? Yes, you can. The biggest time spent when you're creating a collection is actually making all those little DZI pyramids. Next most is making the DZC pyramids, and then finally is making those XML files. And those are actually almost instantaneous, unless you've got some terrifically large collection. So what the authoring tool will do is recognize when there's already a DZC for something, or when there's already a DZI for something, and skip making that DZI again, if you already have it. One thing it doesn't do right now, unfortunately, is notice that something has changed, and that the DZI it's created is out of date. So you'd have to do a little work on your own to delete the pieces of it that you know are out of date, and then it will automatically regenerate just those pieces for you. Can you do collections of collections? Absolutely. The href link that you have in the individual items can refer to any href, including a CXML. There's even a special kind of hash formula that you can specify afterwards, which allows you to not only jump to another collection, but jump to a specific filter state in that collection. So you may have two collections, like our AMG movies and actors collections, where they're both pretty big collections on their own. But if you double-click on one movie, you may want to go to just the actors and directors and folk that were involved with that particular movie. So using a combination of these two things, you can actually do that. There's also an attribute called related links for each item, wherein that shows up kind of deep down in the info pane, where it can say it'll have a related links header, and then you can specify a bunch of different things which are interesting places you should go. So if you look at our athletes collections, NFL, NBA, and so on, you can see that there's down on the bottom there some related links to other teams or other teams that are playing in this city or other collections of interest from that particular spot. Is it possible to redirect where the search goes when you want to submit a search within the search bar of the meta info pane? No, it's not. Although what you can do if you're in an environment where it's not appropriate to put random Bing results up there, there is a special string you can put in saying, don't give me any search at all. But certainly, let one of us know and write down that feature suggestion. Is it documented anywhere how to specify the special filter hash? I don't believe it's documented anywhere. If you go into the client and press, I think, Control-Alt-U, it'll show you the full state from within the client. But I think that's the only place where it's kind of pseudo-documented right now. Okay. I think at this point, I will turn it over to our next speaker.